Hey there, fellow humans. Mark Labusk here for the Simply Practically Human podcast. Today I was joined by a very, very impressive human being, Brendan Carter, who is the creative director and founder of The Learning Hook, which is a commercial e-learning organization. And Brendan's going to talk a bit about the value of values and also about human connection and also a little bit about the importance of, once you've been to some development training and whatnot, why it's so important that after the event is where the real magic happens. Brendan's had an amazing career, a very diverse career. I'm not going to share much more than that. Have a listen to him. Take some notes, particularly if you're in that space of wanting to understand more about the value of learning, particularly online learning. Brendan will give you some great tools and tips. We'll catch you at the end.
Life can get pretty complicated. In the Simply Practically Human podcast, Mark Labusk talks to incredible humans to see the way forward more clearly through the complexity in the world and in our heads. Let's get ready to thrive.
Delighted to be joined by the creative director and founder of The Learning Hook, Brendan Carter. Brendan, thanks for joining me, mate.
Oh, you're welcome, Mark. It's great to be here, mate.
Now, mate, I also understand you're also known by the term the Grand Poobah or the business, but I didn't want to use those, although you should never tell me things like that, Brendan.
Why did I say that? We were about to talk about being a human manager and I said that sometimes I'm known as the Grand Poobah or the business. These are silly nicknames our staff and myself come up with.
I love it. I also, and I know some of your staff pretty well now, having been working with The Learning Hook for a while. I also loved how you said that, you know, you are the managing director, but you don't sort of go with the fancy title. So we'll keep it at creative director and founder. So much to talk about today. The reason I wanted to get you on is because I've had a great experience over the last, I think, 5 or 6 months of being a client of The Learning Hook. And something that's really stood out for me has been just the humans that you have in your organisation and how they work together. And as someone who works in that space of looking sort of past the work and looking at the connection of human beings and how they collaborate and sort of how they have the banter and all these things, we're going to dig into that a bit today. But before we get there, mate, I always start with the human approach of our first impressions of each other because sort of warms us up into it. Your first impressions of Mark Labusk, what were they, mate? And I'll just hold my breath here for a moment.
Well, interesting question, Mark. Where do I go with that? Jeez, I could say all kinds of things. I think the first impression was from reading your book. So it depends when we met. So I kind of met you, if you like, from reading your book ages ago. And I'd heard about this guy that I think you might have followed a bit of Hardwired Humans.
Yes.
Stuff, yeah. And so I'd heard about your work through that. And then I got your book just because I was really interested, loved the title and loved the read. So first impression was that you're a guy that I think, I read into what you do is there's a science to what you do, that you've got some processes, you like to test things. You're a bit of a risk taker. Could see, I thought you're a bit of a salesman as well in a good way. That you're really, really a great communicator. Loved your book, Mark, anyway, and it really stuck with me. I tell the story, well, the story you shared about, flicking the switch for Frankie the robot with many people. So that was my first impression, creative, sale, maybe a bit salesy.
I love it.
Quickly, Mark, I'm taking too long, but one of our dev team who has worked on a project for you, at a stand-up meeting, what are you doing this week? And he said, I'm working on that Mark LaBeouf stuff. So I don't know how you take that, but we all laughed. It was great. And he said, oh, isn't that his name? And we're like, no, it's LaBeouf. But he called you Mark LaBeouf. And so that stuck. That's your nickname behind your back.
Well, there you go, mate. It's the Grand Poobah talking to LaBeouf. I like that. Now, my first impressions of you, like I guess when I saw, I think you might have written to me on LinkedIn, like something about your book or something. And I'm thinking, and first thing I looked at was, geez, this bloke's got his own business and he's a founder and all this. He must be pretty important. And then I think we had a conversation and something that really stuck out for me was just like, there's no bullshit here at all. Now, I hope I'm reading that very accurately. There might be other people listening who know you are like, hang on, have you got the right bloke? But I just love the way that you, like, you were really receptive to the concepts in the book. And then what I started to work out was through that no bullshittery piece was that you actually lived that way. And I thought to myself, I just want to keep talking to this guy. And we did. We sort of, we've caught up off and on for a while until we've done some work. And that sort of takes me into a couple of things I wanted to cover off on today, because I know you are really, you know, you're big on values, but also big on connection, which certainly is something that comes out of my books. Before we go there, mate, I know you live down on the beautiful Surf Coast now, but give us a bit of a brief on your backstory of Brendan Carter. Like, you know, where you grew up, what you like to do outside of work, family, education, just a few things, mate, if you wouldn't mind.
Sure. Born in Bendigo originally. I'll go through, rattle this off quickly, Mark, because I think it's a whole range of things like everybody. But born in Bendigo, lived there till about 8. Then we moved. My mum was about 18 when she had me, 16 with my sister. So really young mum, divorced at 21. Her father was a politician who was a leader in Bendigo. So you can imagine, daughter, you know. Anyway, I share that, I guess, because it has to do with where I'm from. And then we moved to Canberra, lived there for a few years. I think he might have jagged her a job at the public service.
Yeah.
And then I moved to Druin to live with my dad for a year in grade 6. And then I came to Melbourne. And this has been my home for a long time. During my work too, it's probably, I really did a lot of different jobs, Mark, for what seemed like a lifetime ago. And then I've been doing this learning thing, you know, for a different sort of lifetime. I was a cleaner. I was a lollipop man for a short stint. I was a roadie for an AC/DC cover band, playing in places like Brooklyn, and delivery guy, sandwich maker, porter, driving cars all around the city. We had an offsite car park. You can imagine that was fun. And then got really involved in hospitality, ended up bar managing and working at illustrious places like Bobby McGee's in the city. And and ended up managing a bar. And I thought maybe that's my life. I'd always gravitated to helping people. And I decided I didn't want to just help them, I think, through a great hospitality experience. I love hospitality, by the way. You know, I just think something I watch out for when I work with other people and hire them is this: have they worked in a service industry before?
Yep.
Because I really believe what we do is about service to one another, to our customers, of course. But anyway, I decided not to go hospitality and went back to uni, the illustrious age of 24, as a mature age, and did a Bachelor of Education for 4 years. 28, left, decided I didn't want to teach children, and I joined the Army. And then I was in the Army, an education officer. You know, some people were calling me sir, and I was saluting a whole lot of others. It was a very weird sort of experience. It was almost like MASH for our training. I went away for 5 or 6 weeks with a bunch of doctors, psychologists, teachers, and we all had to learn very quickly how to respect our rank and learn as much as we could in a short time about the Army. But I became an education officer, led me into training technology. I left there and then, I did that for 5 years. And then I joined an e-learning company in Melbourne, worked for them for a while, sort of got quite senior there as production manager and learning designer along the way. And that kind of inspired me to start my own business. It was one of the best teams I was ever with. I loved working there, you know, one of those jobs. So then I formed The Learning Hook nearly 10 years ago and just wanted to do it the way I wanted to do it. So that's what I've done ever since.
Jeez, mate, it's like you've packed about 5 generations of careers.
I was an actor too for a while. I was on TV a little while, Mark. Just Google it. I'm not going to say anything more.
Well, you can't get away with that, mate. So what TV show were you on, Brendan?
There was a show a long time ago called Chances.
Yes.
Yes. Scintillating stuff. So to recognise me, I'd have to take my pants down, put it that way.
Wow. Okay. Were you like a, were you like an
if
extra
anyone doesn't
in
know
it?
Chances, it was, yeah, a bit risque. They used to send it up on comedy shows at the time. It was quite funny, but that was a great show. Great actors. Everybody had a lot of fun. And I had a, had a small role in that for about 6 weeks. And I used to really enjoy acting, Mark. I was on the stage and, you know, went to St. Martin's Theatre for years. That was, yeah, what I did outside of school kind of thing.
Bloody hell, mate. What a diverse range of things that you've done from
well, thanks,
sandwich making to lollipop man to yeah. Bachelor of Education. There's something we have in common. I have a diploma of education, not a bachelor, but not yeah. quite as clever as you. In the army, yeah. bloody hell, mate. And then now 10 years in your own business, which is the Learning Hook, which is sort of commercial e-learning. I guess this is where I want to go now. And look, we had a little conversation about this about a month ago about, I'm going to talk a little bit about values to start with. Now, the reason I want to go there is I think my sense with you and values is that values are much more than words on a wall. And I find it interesting at times when I'm speaking to people and they want to do something on their values. And I say, well, what are your values? And they'll be like, oh, you know, it's integrity and honesty and, oh, hang on, let me just Google the rest up. And I'm like, fucking hell, seriously? Like, if they're that important to you, you can only remember two. Yeah, but we've got seven. And I'm like, oh, okay. So why are values so valuable, Brendan, do you think, when they're done for the right reason? What are your thoughts around that?
Yeah, I guess it's just at the core of a good team, Mark, and values are, I'll probably use a whole lot of jargon words if I go on, you know, or it's about authenticity and culture and all of those real things. But values for me, I'll take a step back. I think it's really interesting in a lot of smaller businesses, say small to mid-sized businesses, they mightn't even name their values.
Yeah.
But those that are really great places to work, when you're with the great people that you work with, you've probably got a shared set of, unwritten values, if you like. You haven't explicitly called them out. But, yeah, you are a bunch of people that have each other's back. Yes, there is psychological safety there. You mightn't even know what that means, but there is. You trust one another. You can take risks. You're encouraged to. When people leave for another job, you're all celebrating their success yep. and going to miss them. But, you know, you're just a stepping stone in their journey. All of these things I think are unsaid. And one of the greatest things I did at the Learning Hook, I think, I did anyway, but I did do this. It's interesting why I wrote our values out. I just started digging deeper inside myself and going, what are our values? And there was a reason. That this will sound terrible, but I was writing policies up for a tender. It was a big tender, and this is way back when we hadn't really looked at a lot of these, and I needed to write up some environmental policies and things we didn't have at the time. So I just had to articulate how we do business, how we're doing it anyway. And before I did that, I went, no, hold on, let's just take a moment. Let's do this properly because I'm doing it for a proposal, but let's do it properly because then I've got it. And I wrote our values out and tested them with everybody and everyone just loved it. It really felt like it inspired them and I use them all the time. It's the glue, Mark, that holds us all together, I think. Yeah. And they don't have to be stated. I think it's good if you do state them because you can kind of talk in a similar language. But it's just finding the right people to work with. You probably have a good shared set of values.
Yeah, I love that. It's what's not said or the unsaid piece I think is really important because I think I'm a supporter of, particularly in larger organisations, of creating a set of values. What I also think is important though is that we've got to be careful that people don't understand what the words mean and what the actions that are tied to the words mean as well. And you know, you said before, like, you know, if you think of small business and then you think of, you know, the bigger business, if you got any thoughts on why, is it just purely around numbers? Because does it become harder with values as you get more humans, do you think, in an organisation? What do you think there? Because you've worked in a larger organisation as well. I know that.
Yeah, and I have. I mean, I've worked within larger enterprise as well. I didn't list that in my resume earlier on, but I have had jobs in larger, you know, enterprise and it's very different. Even thinking back, say, to the army then, you know, the experience there is that every large organisation is just a whole lot of teams. So, you know, there's a group of seven of you. It's a great number. If you get there, too many is too many. But, you know, if you've got that sort of team of seven, high performing, you're all getting along, you've probably got a shared set of values that are your own. I'm sure that there's business training gurus out there that would follow this principle, but I've often thought when I've looked at larger organisations that aren't perhaps that have some dysfunctional teams, is I've thought you need to let your teams work as high-performing small businesses.
Yes.
And give them that sort of, in a sense, autonomy. You know, they're a part of a community, which is the larger business. But yeah, anyway, I've felt that way, Mark. But I guess through my own just experiences in the some of the best teams I've worked in have, for whatever reason, have probably been smaller businesses where there's a sense of we're all in this together. We're going to make this happen. You know, there might be 10 of you or 20 of you, but it's really exciting. It's dynamic. Everybody gets input. You know, every pebble in the pond can make a wave. And that's something that's pretty exciting when you bring new people on board because they can change things, add to your values. Yeah, so why go? I don't know. That yeah, there is. I think there is a difference, isn't there? I think it can get lost in larger companies because they become just something you say. You know, it is just talking the talk. Oh, here's the values. Here's your induction. Watch this 5-minute, 2-minute animation on our values and why they're important to us. Da da da. It's the real connection with your manager that's going to make an impact of whether those values are articulated or they're lived. You know, you'll soon see it. So it's just that impact you can have on your own team.
I love it, mate. And I guess what came to mind for me then is, particularly in larger organisations with more humans, is that the interpretation of the values can be different for different humans. And I guess one of the traps I've seen, which I think organisations should start to reconsider, is when they start to use values as sort of the pillars for performance reviews. And it's like you start to get measured on whether or not you live the values. And I think that's quite dangerous. And that's why I love what you said before about that idea of they're unsaid or unknown. And it's the way that human beings work together. So I'm going to ask you this question now because, and I'm sure you don't have to Google this up, but what are the values at the Learning Hook?
all right, now I feel out of pressure, but I'll tell you.
You're bloody better.
The first one I love. Well, I love them all. So I'll just up the ante as I go. Love all, serve all.
Yep.
Is number one. Love all, serve all really speaks to, for me, Mark, and I hope those, we articulate that. But that's for everybody and particularly each other first. Love all, serve all. Doesn't matter who walks through the door, Mark, whether they got their shoes on or not, everybody gets treated with the same sense of respect and urgency. And we try to help them if we can. So, you know, walking through the door sounds like a customer, but it's much more than that. We need to get back to one another. Like if I send something, so in action, you know, if I send something to a teammate, if I want them to review it, I'll turn track changes on.
Yep.
Okay, so that's really minutia, but it's me thinking through what do they need to do? What's going to make their life a little bit easier rather than going, oh, I'll just send you this and not give you a good brief. And take the time to give you a good brief or take the time to think about how I can better communicate with you to make your life easier. And I expect the same from you, for me. So we love all, serve all, and same for customers. You know, I've spent a lot of time talking to different people over the years that, you know, you never know when it's going to come around and it doesn't even matter. If I can help someone, I will. And if we can't help them from a commercial sense, I'll still give them as much advice as I can. The next one that I'd share is have fun and make money. Controversial. We're making money. But have fun and make money, Mark. That's in everybody's contracts, by the way.
Yep.
It says your responsibility, one of their is to have fun and make money.
Yeah.
And one of our responsibilities is to make sure they have fun and make money as an employer. It's not all, you know, shits and giggles, Mark, at the Learning Hook. It's pretty hard sometimes. So having fun, the sense of that is actually that you're doing something you care about. Hopefully you enjoy what you do mostly. You know, it's stuff that you're proud of and you're going to do good work. And that makes the hard things easier. And yes, they get paid. Make sure they do.
It's interesting, mate. We shouldn't apologise for wanting to value making money or creating an organisation that is commercially viable because, you know, that's supporting human beings to live lives and to exist, survive and to even to thrive into things. So
it can turn some people off, Mark, but I really like that as a value that we're in a commercial enterprise we do heaps of good. We do pro bono work for organisations and lots of good community things, and I won't get into that, but we do need to pay the bills.
And, absolutely. You know, and other values?
Just in time, just enough, and just for me. The triple J. I know these sound like odd values maybe, but they're really important to us. We love that from a learning culture and learning company point of view, just in time, just enough, and just for me is a great sort of design principle. But it's actually a great way to think about how we serve one another and work together, that we give people what they need when they need it, not when they don't. And we do just enough. We think through, like, I don't want to give you too much. If I can go the extra mile to give you less, I will.
Yeah.
You know, and that it's just for you. That, you know, I have personalized whatever I'm doing for you as a teammate. And then it also goes outside our business, of course, too. And it also relates to how we run the business. I'm always asking staff to think about ways that are more in the triple J, like from a business administration point of view. So from an operational sense, what's the triple J? From a design sense, what's the triple J? And then there's quality always is our next value. That used to be quality before cost. That's changed. I laugh because it was always one that we, you know, I like that. I thought we've got to go for quality first. When I started the Learning Hook, Mark, there was three. Guy Hamish Riddell gave me this. He's a very smart man, but he gave me three principles, and it was quality, quality, and quality.
Yeah.
When you're starting up a business, and that's what I focused on, you know, for everything. If scope's blowing, just deliver what we will be proud of. And yeah, quality always. So that probably speaks for itself, but we've got to support each other's work to get that quality. And be honest with clients too. If a client is taking their own vision sometimes and maybe throwing things in the mix that we feel is going to infringe on or compromise the quality, we should call it out and give them the advice that they're paying for. And if there's things going on that we don't understand, hopefully we'll then understand and, you know, deliver what they need. But quality always. And the last one, of course, is accountability, but we call it we own it. I guess that's just because we've used phrases. We own it, and we do own it, and it speaks to everything else I've probably said. But all the other values are kind of just words on a page, mate, if we don't own it.
Look, I love it. I love it. You sort of said they're a bit strange and they're not, you know, your normal values. But words on a wall, it's challenging because I think they're done with really good intention, but you sort of see the same words turn up on different walls. And what I like about what you've created are they are, you know, they're phrases, they're statements and like they're real commitments. So you can read that and go, all right, have fun and make money. I get that. You know, the triple J, just in time, just enough, just for me. It takes it past a word on a wall, and it takes it past maybe, I'm sure they can still be interpreted in some different ways. And this is what I'm interested to understand now, because I think there's some lessons here for the listeners who maybe get caught in the words. Is how do you help then your employees to make sense of what the phrases mean? Because I think this is a really important part.
Yeah, I guess it's just that practical, I don't know, it's walking the talk.
Yep.
You know, probably overused, but it really is just that, I think, Mark, for values, for putting them in place. There's definitely things like putting it in a contract, like I said, of having fun and making money. It's a bit tongue-in-cheek, but it's going, for us anyway, by putting the values in a contract that we've got a commitment to them, I think it does actually formalise it a little bit.
Yep.
And other things like we get back to everybody, try to, I know it's not 100% of the time, but within 4 hours, Mark.
Yep.
So that includes each other. And I think I've got to say, for our values and just my advice to any team is put each other first. It's like if you look at that, the whole self-care isn't selfish, right? So you've got to look after number one first to be in a good state for everybody else.
Yep.
Well, from a team mentality point of view and for your outside customers, whether they be other teams in your organisation or other clients, you've got to look after your team. I think you've got to put them first, because doing that, you're all going to do an awesome job and be happier, get along, you got each other's backs. And so then what you then deliver will be much better quality. People see a functioning, high-performing team, you know, because you look after each other first. So those values, I think, you know, getting back to one another within 4 hours. We do it as soon as possible. But and an example too is if somebody wants to meet another teammate, Mark, you shouldn't have to wait a week. Whether they want to meet the CEO, you know, that's another title I could wear, the creative director. They want to meet me. Why should they wait a week?
Yeah.
Like, ever, honestly. Like, there could be a reason. And I think that if there was, I would definitely share it, that reason. But anyway, I personally think that everybody should be available quite quickly for their teammates if they want to meet. So I don't know. They're probably not answering it, but they're practical things I think that we've put in place. Talking about the values, of course, is important. We've done workshops within the group too on some of this stuff, you know, about what we enjoy at work and, you know, really of the opinion that we should be doing more of what we enjoy unless that's the have fun and make money. Yeah.
So just on that too, and the way that it shows out, like you said, sort of walking the talk before, and what's shown out for me, this is an observation from working with your team, is the banter. Like, there's really healthy banter. And when you talk about having fun, love all, serve all, these are the things that I look for. It's like, how do these people actually getting on together? Is it a bit bloody scratchy? And look, this is serious work that you do as well. So obviously, as you said, it's not always bloody throwing rose petals out in front of each other and, you know, holding hands and skipping along. But one thing I noticed from the time I've been working with your team is the banter that they have amongst each other is like, it's very, very easy to see, but there's also a bit of an edge to it as well. There is that accountability comes through as well, really strongly. So I think organizations need to start to understand too that banter and fun are really important values to have, but at the same time, there's also an edge to it as well that you can, teams that have banter and have fun usually hold each other to account really strongly. It's not just like people say, you can't do that because what about when you've got to, you know, have a hard conversation? I reckon it happens easier when people are connected more and have that fun and banter.
I couldn't agree more, Mark. Anyway, thanks for sharing what you did then. It's great. I guess it's great feedback, but I'm glad you see that. And we all know those challenging, you know, conversations are some of the hardest from a personal life point of view to a work point of view. And I guess those that grow and have more of those harder conversations learn that the faster you do, the better off everybody is. And most of us appreciate it. You know, we don't want to just be, you know, scratching. This isn't a good metaphor, scratching the itch. you know, go and get the ointment quickly, deal with it. You know, don't let it fester. It's really, it's amazing. The smallest things, you know, something we do when we own it, you know, from that accountability point of view, is that in a team meeting, you think you put your foot in your mouth, then get off the team meeting, take 20 seconds to write someone a quick note going, geez, I did it. Did that bother you? What I said, I think I put my foot in my mouth.
Yep.
You know, it's just a bit of humility, or is it humility? I don't know. Anyway, seek forgiveness. And those sort of things, I know that delivers in spades for people's psychological safety, and they know that you're being accountable yourself. And most of us are aware of it when we get something wrong. And I just don't think you should move on that quickly. It doesn't take long to smooth it out, and then you don't have that festering stuff. I had a guy in the army, Mark, who said to me when I joined, he said to me, because it was weird, as you can imagine, teacher, you know, bartender, all those things I mentioned, and then suddenly I'm in the army as an education officer, having to teach soldiers who all sort of sit to attention, you know, when I walk in the classroom and or salute me. And one of the officers said to me, he goes, "Brendan, so quick tip, I know it's weird joining as a teacher and you haven't really, you know, you haven't done the training properly yet and people are going to be saluting you. It's very important that you don't ever apologize. You don't show you're wrong." And, oh, mate, I didn't take umbrage to him face-to-face, but I never did that. So personally, I think I don't agree with that. I think you're stronger by being fallible.
I like it. And I guess, you know, that's the beauty of the diversity of your career is all the different things that you learn along the way and the things that you can take with you. Hey, I want to just do a bit of a slight detour here onto connection because I know it's another topic that you are interested in. And I also know, given the times we've been in the last nearly 2 years, like I think I've got this right. I may not. But you said there's science in my work, so I sort of feel half smart now. I reckon you've missed The Office, haven't you?
Oh, yeah, I have. Yeah, definitely have.
So just in that, like, let's talk a bit about the human connection side now. Mm. And in particular, I'm always fascinated about why people go back for the second catch-up.
Mm.
So, you know, say for when we first met and we offered some things over LinkedIn, and then I came in and caught up with you one time, and I was nowhere near ready, as in I've had some ideas, but I didn't quite know what I wanted to do with the stuff I had. And what was going through my mind after our first face-to-face catch-up is I actually want to catch up with that guy again. And it's not just about, and I know you were bloody helpful, like you couldn't have been more helpful to say, here's some things you need to think about and whatnot. But why do you think it is that sometimes they might be forced into it because it's a formality in things, but if it's not forced, why is it that human beings, you reckon, want to have that second, third, fourth catch-up? What goes on there?
I don't know. I think it's is it bit of curiosity,
yep,
admiration. I think probably boils down to, I've got those listening, you can't see the blackboard in the background. There's a bottle of champagne there. Maybe it's about having a good time. Is it? I don't know, Mark. These are simple things, but I think you go back for the second catch-up when it's an authentic sort of go back, is that there might be something in it for you. Like you find someone interesting and you think we you know, could help one another. But there's a genuine, I kind of think I'd enjoy their company. That's why I'd go back. It's not networking. I'd say some people do that too. So there's the whole cynical side of that you do come across people that where it can feel disingenuous, where they're kind of following their playbook or something. But, you know, look, some people are very natural in connection, aren't they, you know, and really human about it. And others go, I don't know, it's never gelled, but they're trying to. So we've all got to try. So I shouldn't be too harsh about saying that cynical side of it. I feel like sometimes at conferences and things, there can be that kind of playbook of networking. And I don't know, I'm just not into that much. I don't do that well. But if I'm curious, I admire them a bit, I'll be going back.
So what have you found with yourself over time? And again, given such different roles and the diversity in your work, have you got better at connection? Or like, was it ever a thing for you where you were like, because some people are quite like introverted, or they're even quite like scared of being the one to make the approach, or to, you know, you walk into a room, do you sort of stand back in the corner? What have you found over time that you've got better at this connection piece, or is it pretty natural for you, given, you know, when you're a roadie for an AC/DC cover band, mate, you'd, I don't know, what was it like for you over time to be a connector?
I don't know, Mark. It's a hard, I guess, so at parties and things, I will hold back a little bit. So I'm not overtly, I don't know, after a couple of beers, I might open up a bit more. I'm one of those people. But, yeah, I don't know. I think I have gotten better at it over the years, yeah. Probably adding a little bit of science to what comes naturally, Mark,
yep,
in some ways, to be honest about that. I think, you've got to read, take on board what you're learning. You know, look, when I started the Learning Hook, our catch cry as a company is connecting knowledge to action.
Yes.
And I love it. That's so important to me in my own personal life too, is that knowledge is pointless without action. If you don't do anything with it, you will lose it. And what a waste of time if you've just read something inspiring or got a great idea. You know, chase it, do something about it, take action. You know, so connecting knowledge to action is very important.
Geez, mate. Well, you've just and I told you we could go anywhere here, but when you've been really up and about with everything, but you absolutely lit up when you said that. Like, people can't see you. Maybe it's a bottle of champagne that is sitting behind you.
Yes.
Give us some tips and tools then around, like, this is really important because the work that you do, and I know that the space I'm in, the thing that I shit myself about the most is that people come into the room, have a wow of a time, and then they just off they go and they go back out of the bubble into the other world, and they don't connect the knowledge to the action. Give us two or three simple and practical tools and tips here, mate. You're an expert in this field. You've seen a lot of this. You've created some amazing work with your clients. How can people get better at connecting that knowledge to what they go and do, to their actions?
Mm. Where to start? I guess
start at the start, mate. And mate, you keep saying things are pretty simple, and that's what I like, because this is called the Simply Practically Human podcast, mate.
Yeah, it is practical. So here's a Franklin Covey phrase. So I did say I learned from stuff. There is some science, but it's planned with the end in mind.
Yep.
So if you're creating some training or learning, if you're the creator of it or planning on it, getting someone else to do it for you, engaging the learning hook to do it, for example, but plan with the end in mind. So the end should be, it doesn't end at the classroom. It doesn't end with the e-learning course, you know. That's a learning event. So what happens after that? You know, it's the campaign that's going to win the war, right? It's not just that one-off event. That might be all bells and whistles. There's some Columbia research on this, Mark. I think I might have shared this with you before, but it's a great one to get the idea and some rigor in research, is that 24% from businesses usually invested in pre-training.
Yep.
I need the stats in front of me. Don't worry about the stats, but the last one's the important one. Is that in pre-training, about 15% of budget spent on it. In the actual learning event, in creating it, it's about another, you know, 80%.
Yep.
And there's a last 5% that's put on post. Now, what the research showed was that about 25% of what the learner takes away happens pre, 25% from the event, and 50% of the change it can make happens in the post.
Yep.
So those stats are really powerful. So plan for it. What are they going to do after the event? When are you going to follow up? Just put some pre-programmed emails into your system that follow up in a week with one of the hot tips or one of the key takeaways from the training. Yeah, I've taken a while to get there, Mark, but that's the practical idea, is just plan with the end in mind. And it doesn't have to be rocket science. It's literally putting some posters up to remind people of what the training was. And another one too is that if people are going off to a learning event, there's sort of these simple things you can do as a manager or as a teammate, if you just want to help them out, is ask them what they're looking forward to learning and say, I'd be really keen to hear from you after it of how that, whatever they say, if you get that out of it and how that goes. There's some, I'm not going to quote the stat, but there's a huge amount higher retention when you do that, because they've got an expectation, they've got some action, they're connecting the knowledge into some form of action. That action is that I'm going to be reporting back to my manager, but maybe it's just to a teammate and you're going to have a chat about it. Well, you've just done them a huge favor, because they'll probably pick up, you know, 30% more.
And maybe what would be a final thing that you would suggest here?
I guess it's just it, probably at a personal level is, again, Mark, it's not rocket science. It's make a plan. So have a think about what you can do and diarize it. So when you diarize something, you're thinking about, so you learn something new. How do I connect that to action? Well, don't just sort of in general go, oh, I'll definitely be using that and I can use it here, there, and this is what I'll do back at work. Put it in your diary.
Yep.
Next Tuesday morning, and you can visualize, there's like a huge increase in people actually doing it if they visualize and plan on a time of where and when they're going to do something. You're much more likely to do it. And there's also other things like nudge theories, quite popular now. We were laughing about that recently with nudges. We said, where's the winks? Because you need a nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Don't forget the winks. But, you know, the nudge theory is make it easier for people. So if you want to exercise more, put some runners by your bed is the example a lot of people use. And that's an easy one to remember. But signage, diaries, little reminders to take action with what you learn, you know, turn knowledge into action. It's just those little things. One thing, it's the low-hanging fruit. There's some jargon, overused phrase, but make it easy on yourself. Don't do too much to start and build it up over time. And it does turn it into action.
I loved it how you went where we all go, went straight for the data and the stats, and I think you got it pretty right, because I know the thing you're talking about. I was nearly going to bring it up on my screen with the circles and the different bits and pieces.
Yeah. I think those stats are right that I said in the end, Mark.
Mate, they are. They actually are right, because I was going to have a look, but then I realised, because it's something you sent to me, which helped me to make sense of particularly creating something with the end in sight, because you know, you get asked a lot of questions, you would, and I certainly do in my work, about like, how does this stay alive? And I talk about the three E's, which is educate and then experiment. So take it back into the business and experiment. And that is your nudges and your those little bits and pieces of the reminders and these types of things, doing something in a formal way. What I do love with what you said, and I think this is a big one for all managers, is don't just send your people off on a program because every year you've got to send them off on a program. Actually invest and say to them, like, what do you want to go and do and why is that? And then when they come back, it's like, okay, so now what are you – I think that's such an important point. Like those really practical things that you talked about is be invested in the learning and development of your people past the old, you know, go and sign up for an Excel spreadsheet course. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but if you're just doing it to tick the box, it comes up pretty quickly. And the third E, the third one being embed is this, and I guess that comes to what I'm going to ask you about now, because I think at times, and what I've loved again about working with the learning hook is that I actually understand my work now better than what I did before I started to work with you, because you've really simplified some stuff. And I might have been trying to complicate it or make it too complex because I thought it might have been a bit fancier. And, you know, working with Kat and Lou and Brendan, Brendan with an A and then Brendan with an E and some other people in your business, right. It's actually making more sense to me about the value of the work that I bring. So what are your thoughts around how humans could, I say could, try and complicate and make things more complex than what they need to be, when the answers can be, as I've found by working with you guys, can be a lot simpler than what I would have thought they were. Have you got a thought around why we might try and make things more complicated and complex, if you think we do?
Yeah, there's a few things that I think about with that one, Mark, is we don't have time sometimes.
Yep.
So you don't get there. I think most people would be aware of, or maybe not, you know, but the KISS principle. So, you know, keep it simple, stupid. The people that are aware of that all would nod their head and go, absolutely. And then we catch ourselves, like we're all susceptible to it, Mark, isn't it, of overcomplicating something.
Yep.
It may be just the start of the work is looking at everything. A problem that you're trying to solve. So there's a lot of complexity and you've got to take the time out to get to the simple. So I think there's a human, it's just natural sometimes to get to that complexity, and then you've got to take the extra time. You know, it's the old, sorry, the letter's so long, I didn't have time to make it shorter.
Yeah.
It's like having a chat, isn't it, too? You know, when we chat, it's off the cuff. So you might take a long time to get to that key point. And then if you're going to write it and refine it, it's one sentence as opposed to half a dozen. I think there's definitely, this is the cynical side of me, is that I'd say there's definitely organizations, and I think they're barking up the wrong tree, but they're looking for a differentiator.
Yeah.
So people, organizations, businesses are looking for everyone's, what's your differentiator? How are you different? Well, if there's a tried and true method for something that's very simple and clear, you know, about being human, showing you care, you know, caring for your teammates. These things sometimes for some people might not be sexy enough. So we've got to go, no. It's micro consulting at a human level. And we're going to do some rapid prototyping through co-design to get there. Okay, well, what are you talking about? Oh, we're talking about meeting for a couple of hours, brainstorming a few ideas. anyway. I think that there's some complexity added to stuff because people are trying to sell it. We buy robot vacuums, Mark.
Yes.
And then I find, so I'm speaking personally, of course, now, but then I find we're selling robot vacuums.
Yeah.
There was just overly complex thing when this thing with the stick that has really good suction and you walk around the house and you vacuum stuff up, you know. So, yeah, but we're looking for the gadgets, what's new. And so every retailer or salesperson sometimes is going, what's our differentiator? I'll complicate things.
Yeah, I get you. Oh, no, you're on point here, because I think the differentiator, I think, is simplicity. Yeah. I reckon that if we keep it simple, like, you know, it is about, you know what? What about your work, mate? What are you going to do? Well, you're going to help people to understand the importance of having some fun, caring about people, saying thank you and being helpful.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. Yes. What does that all mean? Like, what's it do to the ROI? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question.
Yeah.
But what I'm going to say to you is if you start to practice some of those things, if you build deeper connection, if you create a stronger sense of belonging for your people, ultimately your business results will be better. But then they want to sort of know, well, where's the Gantt chart? And I'm like, no, we're not, you know, and where's the fancy, like, I need the fancy PowerPoint deck to show me what you're going to do and where are the slides? And I'm like, no. It's you got to trust that if we keep it simple and we get back to what it is to be human, actually this work can work really well. And that's the other thing with time there. I loved when you said that, Brendan, because this work, the game of human, I say, is a long game. Yeah. So it doesn't happen in a month or 2 months or 3 months. You start to see some little indicators, but it takes time. And I guess that's why I'm, you know, and again, the enjoyment with working with you guys is you've pushed me into that space of it's at the back end, mate, where your value is. And that we're talking about 12 to 18 months of nudges and reminders and all of these sorts of things. So I think we should keep it simple. Hey, I wanted to talk a little bit, and this is going to sound a bit self-indulgent now, but you and your team have been instrumental at getting me off my ass and creating this thing called the Human Manager Academy, which we're going to launch in 2022. What I love about you too is whilst you're the creative director and all these other fancy titles, you keep involved in things as well. What's your sense around the work that we've been doing around this piece?
Yeah, the Human Manager Academy, Mark, well, it's close to my heart. One of the things that I love about, I guess, being a founder of a business is you're in a really privileged position to chase things at times that you're personally interested in. Going back to my teaching days, I was at a lecture learning to be a teacher, and I heard from one of our lecturers said, well, I was a teacher and I influenced 30 kids, and then I was, a deputy or, a lead, and I had, a few grade levels, and then I was a principal and I had the whole school and I was sort of impacting the community. And now I'm teaching you guys and you're all going to go out there and spread this thing that I care about in a way, if you buy into my view on learning. And I thought that was really cool. What she was talking about was going to scale, Mark, with content. And so your content, that kind of content around Human Manager, about making places a better place to work. We spend so much time at work. If we can help make it better, well, anyway, it helps me sleep at night or it makes me feel good. So I love the privilege of what you're going to launch in your portal is that you can impact people all around the world, Mark, because you're putting your fantastic content and simple practical methods online, which means it can go to scale.
Yep.
And hopefully, we design that in a way and it'll change over time, but design it in a way where it is just in time, just enough, and just for, your audience so that they can make it work at their work and they can individualize things a little bit. Some of those nudges will be how do you use that in manufacturing compared to white collar, et cetera, the practical takeaways. Anyway, so, I'm excited about it, mate. I hope it really goes off.
I'm sure it'll go well because I know I just saw it on LinkedIn recently. The Learning Hook do pretty well with their partners that they work with around winning awards too. You've won some pretty good awards along the way, haven't you?
Yeah. Thanks, Mark. We've been recognised, a lot through the years, and put in for them. You put an application together. It takes a long time. This year was a bit overwhelming. I'd chosen a couple of projects, and it's hard doing that anyway, where you talk to your client and go, look, we think this was great work and we're really keen on celebrating it and recognising it. Can we put in for an award? See how we go. And I had a couple of other clients ask me. So I ended up putting in 4.
Yep.
And I haven't mentioned, but I have another company that I co-founded called Factor C. And we put in an award for our care. It's called We Care. And it is about humanising workplaces, Mark. So we've got similar love affair with that kind of content. But I put in awards for that. So there was 5. Anyway, it was a lot of work. But, yes, we've been recognised for all kinds of things, best accessibility training of the year, best onboarding, best customer experience, health and safety, leadership stuff, shifting things online. But, it's just a testament to the team. I know, that it's just true and it's great to take the time out to celebrate that. I think it means a lot to them. And particularly to groups like, say, Parkinson's Victoria this year picked up a couple of gold awards. And I know how happy they were about it. They just seemed so internally chuffed and excited about that. And it really does mean a lot to me, but also our team, that they were. It wasn't a high-end project. You know, in our standards, it wasn't hugely I hope I don't offend anybody, but it wasn't hugely innovative from a true sort of all the nuts and bolts of it all. But you know what it was? It was called Parkinsong, and it's great content, Mark, that helps people with Parkinson's.
Yes.
The trainings for leaders to help people suffering from Parkinson's to it's sort of speech therapy through song, and it improves the quality of life hugely, I think. And it's been, you know, Melbourne Uni's been involved with a lot of testing and a lot of rigor in it all, and it's gone really well for them. So they're chuffed. So it's good content.
Well done, mate. And I think a lot of that stuff stems back to what you talked about earlier today, is that your guys and girls in your business living the values that are set there helps create relationships and connections with your clients that ultimately end up in, which I think is great, some recognition of the great work. Hey, just on that then, let's finish up with, where do the listeners find you and the Learning Hook? If they wanted to learn more about your organisation and about yourself and the team, where can they go?
Sure. Just look me up on LinkedIn. It's Brendan Carter. Brendan with an E. Brendan. My mother was a phonetic speller. So Brendan Carter on LinkedIn, or of course, just go to our website. It's learninghook.com.au, and there's Contact Us page, and you know, we wear our heart on our sleeve, so there's lots of information there. And lastly, is my other business, Factor C.
Yes.
The WeCare program is, really taking off now. And I co-founded that with a guy called Graham Cowan, who's a magnificent man. He's helped start Are You OK? He was a part of the original team and has been involved with it from the get-go pretty much, and just does great work in improving the mental health of organisations. And that work, that's what Graham and I do in our program, helps teammates in distress. So go to factorc.com.au as well if you're interested in WeCare.
You should check that out. And I know, again, if I think about our connection, Graham's been on my podcast, and it was because I reached out to you and said, hey, what do you reckon? Do you reckon he'd come on? And you said, yeah, just give him a shout out to him and maybe drop my name. And that's the other thing I love about connection, is it's not always about you. It's about how you can connect other human beings to do good work. Hey, Brendan, it's been great to have you on, mate. We did go around the world a bit, but I think there's so much value in what you've just shared, and I hope to catch up again soon, mate.
Yeah, I hope it is valuable. And, yeah, thanks, Mark. It's been a pleasure, mate.
Love Brendan's, first of all, the fact that he could roll off the values in the organisation that he founded. That's an important one for me, because as I said in the episode, that there are times when I talk to people who can't remember more than two values that are on a poster in their office or on a poster on the wall. So it was great to hear things like love all, serve all, have fun and make money. And no apologies for wanting to make money in business. I think that's an important part of why businesses are so important for societies. Quality always. The triple J, I really love that triple J piece as well. Just in time, just enough, and just for me. So the values don't have to be one word, but I think, as Brendan said as well, it's important that people can understand their part in the values and what the values mean to them, and maybe their own interpretation of those values as well. So really important that values become more than just words on a wall, that we see some actions and we see some behaviours that align to those as well. I loved it when he shared, and having working with his organisation now, what really came to mind for me as we're creating this online learning portal called the Human Manager Academy, with my, you know, the real idea for me is to bring that to scale and to bring it to the world, was when you're thinking about training and development, is planning with the end in mind. And what he talked about there was what happens after the event. And it's so important. And I'm really excited to be working with the Learning Hook, because they've opened my eyes up to the importance of creating what I'm calling the human champion community, which will provide an ongoing ability for those who have attended online learning or come to a blend of online and face-to-face, that they're going to be able to join a community where they can share their learning and also be continually reminded and be given nudges about some of the key actions and key content that moves from educate to experiment and finally to the embed phase. So, you know, the end in sight is really important. And for those managers that are lucky enough to be able to send their human beings off to development programs, that point around checking in with them and asking them what they're looking forward to before they go. There's so many people who just get an email that says you're going to a training program and they get there without even a conversation with their manager. So it's important that you be checking in with them before they go to find out what they're wanting to get out of it. And then just as importantly afterwards, to find out whether they got what they were looking for and how they're going to do something with that information. And the third one was easy, like make a plan. When you come back, put some things in your diary. If there were some things that particularly stood out for you, like I have the first five questions, is put them in the diary and make sure that you do something with them. I think really, really key points that he made. Loved his thoughts around simplicity and complexity or complicated, that sometimes we go for the complicated because the simple's not sexy enough. It won't stand out enough. It doesn't differentiate us enough. When I think that the differentiation these days, because the world is so complicated and we're trying to make it more complex, is to be simple in your language. Use different language, use language that's understandable, and get away from the usual buzzwords that we hear. Really enjoyed this conversation, particularly loved Brendan's story about his backstory. Like so many different careers, you know, working in the service industry as he went through, whether it was a bartender, like the lollipop man, you know, holding up that sign to get the kids across the road to get to school, you know, going off and doing a Bachelor of Education in the army, working as a roadie for a cover band for AC/DC, like so many life experiences that, you know, if you got time like I'm fortunate to spend time with Brendan, you'd find out why he's such a well-rounded human being. Hey, if you love this one, as I always say, tap away with those thumbs and give us a review and rate it 5 stars as well, please, fellow humans. And if you liked it, keep sharing these. If we want to get these to scale, and, you know, I always look to get my numbers up on my listeners, is share it with your friends. They might be really, at the moment, interested in this space of learning and development. But until next time, let's keep it simple, keep it practical, and keep it human. Bye for now.